Now, swamps don't always have the best reputation. They're seen as dark, murky, and stagnant. Maybe that's why the phrase "drain the swamp" has taken off in Washington, D.C. But our next guest says that real-life swamps should be preserved, not drained, and that swamps and wetlands play a very important role in our environment and in the fight against climate change. Additionally, with increasing heavy rain events and storms, including the massive hurricane currently impacting the East Coast, wetlands may become more important than ever. Jillian Davies joins us now. She's a senior ecological scientist at the Massachusetts-based BSC Group and a visiting scholar at the Global Development Environment Institute at Tufts University. She recently co-wrote a piece for The Conversation titled, "What the World Needs Now to Fight Climate Change, More Swamps." Jillian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, Jillian, swamps, historically, maybe even up to the present day, people seem to think of them as literally wastelands and things that, to make use of it, you have to drain it, dam it, dike it to make it useful for agriculture, for people to live on. Can you talk a little bit about our negative attitude toward wetlands over human history?
Yes, it certainly goes way back, probably thousands of years, because swampland is generally not good for agricultural purposes and definitely not good for building a house on, for instance. However, that reflects a lack of understanding of what wetlands and swamps do for us. They store water during flooding, and there are now some recent studies that show that have been looking at how much wetlands prevent flood damage from the kind of hurricane that's hitting North Carolina right now, this Hurricane Florence. And they studied the effects of wetlands in reducing flood damage during Hurricane Sandy that hit the Northeast a number of years ago, and found that it saved wetlands, communities with wetlands had saved $625 million worth of prevented flood damage during that time. And they also have reduced the impacts of coastal storms on coasts. And we also are seeing with climate change, we're seeing more drought, and wetlands store water on the landscape and then become a source of water when we need water supply. So people now think of them more as a sponge that absorbs excess water when we have too much, but then is a source of releasing water when we have too little. So those are just some of the things. And then the other thing that I think people didn't understand long ago is that although wetlands only occupy between 5% and 8% of the land surface on the Earth, depending on which study you look at, they actually store 30% of the world's soil carbon. And that is really important because when carbon's in the soil, it's not in the atmosphere. The plant in a wetland will pull, as all plants do, all plants pull carbon out of the atmosphere, and then when they die, it gets microbes decompose it into soil. And because wetlands are flooded with water, that water prevents the organic material from basically decomposing back into the atmosphere and releasing its carbon to the atmosphere. And that's why in wetlands you have the dark black mud that is really deep and soft. That's decomposed organic matter, and it's carbon-based. And it's so wetlands, basically, they are like forests. They act as lungs for the planet. And so they're part of the carbon solution.
How much wetlands have we lost globally in the history of human development? Do we have a ballpark figure?
Sure. Ballpark figure for areas where this wetland loss has been measured, and in some parts of the world it has not yet been measured, is over 50%, a little bit over 50%, which is huge because we've lost all of those ecosystem services in those areas that when we lose the wetlands that I just talked about.
Talking to Jillian Davies, senior ecological scientist at the Massachusetts-based BSC Group, about the value of wetlands and why she says we shouldn't be draining swamps. We should be preserving them and restoring them. And you write in that piece we're talking about, Jillian, that even in the climate change community, people very worried about climate change, we may be overlooking the value of wetlands. Why is that?
That's an interesting story, too. One of our co-authors, Dr. Bill Mumma, has been very active in the global climate change policy discussion for decades. And he says that that community of scientists, most of them are physical scientists. And he himself started out as an atmospheric chemist, for instance, who moved into the policy realm. And so they haven't thought as much about the natural ecosystems as they've thought about the human-caused emissions part. And the human-caused emissions part is the origin of the problem. So that's it's really important what they're doing. It's just, and then recently they have incorporated forests to some extent, and they're beginning to incorporate wetlands, but there just hasn't been a full appreciation by climate scientists of the significance of the role of wetlands. Like I said, they occupy a really small percent of the land surface, but have a disproportionate role in pulling carbon out of the atmosphere and storing it and keeping it locked up. And some of the biggest areas of this sort of soil carbon are in the northern latitudes, where we have basically frozen wetland soil that's called permafrost. And that carbon has been locked up for thousands of years. It's accumulated ever since the last ice age, basically. And as temperatures warm, that permafrost is thawing. And as it thaws, it's releasing large quantities of carbon, which then create more warming because it's adding carbon to the atmosphere from the thawing organic soils. And then that more warming accelerates the thawing of the permafrost, so it gets into this feedback loop that it creates more global warming, which creates more thawing. And it could get to the point where that thawing is releasing as much carbon every year as the U.S. currently releases due to human emissions annually, which is a vast amount. That just gives you some sense of how much carbon is locked up in those soils and how much could be released. So we really need to keep the global temperature from going much higher so that kind of positive, positive meaning it's all going in the same direction, not that it's a good thing, feedback loop doesn't get going to a point where we can't stop it.
Talking about the value of wetlands, Jillian Davies is with us, ecological scientist, co-author of a piece in The Conversation called What the World Needs Now to Fight Climate Change, More Swamps. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about the value, the role that wetlands play? Do you think they're in need of more protection around the world, in the U.S., here in Wisconsin? Is this an issue in your community, wetlands being filled, replaced? Many of us, including the city of Madison, are built on what used to be wetlands. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. We continue our conversation about wetlands with Jillian Davies, senior ecological scientist at the Massachusetts-based BSC Group and visiting scholar at the Global Development and Environment Institute at Tufts University. Join in with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. Has your community experienced a conflict between the need for new development and the need for preserving wetlands? What ended up happening? Do you think enough is being done to preserve these areas? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Cindy is on the line in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, you had made a comment about how we don't understand our wetlands or preserve our wetlands. Like, you know, we've learned our lesson over the years. Well, actually, I don't think we have. We're not preserving our wetlands, and here in Wisconsin just a couple of years ago they passed a, a bill which basically gives people free rein to destroy wetlands without even getting a permit. So we still don't understand the value of wetlands, and I don't know if we ever will before it's too late.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Jillian, is that the case around the country, that you think at the government level wetlands aren't appreciated enough?
Thank you for that call, and you're absolutely right that not everybody understands this. I guess I was speaking more scientifically, and in some, you know, some communities more than others. And you're absolutely right about what's happened in Wisconsin. Wisconsin had a very strong wetlands protection law that, you know, the Republican side of the aisle really took that apart. And fortunately, you have a wonderful state wetlands association, the Wisconsin Wetlands Association, that built a strong coalition to at least protect some of your protective legislation, so that effort by the Republican legislators was not as successful as they had initially intended. But I'm hopeful that your state will build consensus to bring back the good protections that you used to have. And then it just as troubling is what's going on at the federal level right now with this current administration's efforts to really dismantle the 2015 Clean Water Rule, that and they would like to redefine the waters of the United States based on Judge Scalia's definition. And apparently Judge Scalia went to a dictionary for his definition, and he did not turn to science. His approach did not incorporate the scientific understanding that we do have, whereas the 2015 Clean Water Rule was based on a report called the Connectivity Report that looked at how wetlands and waters from headwaters down to the ocean are connected and are the different components that are needed to provide all of us with clean drinking water and protect our water supply. And that report, of based on 1,200 or more peer-reviewed articles, provided the scientific basis for the 2015 Clean Water Rule. And there was a lengthy public comment period, and this effort to repeal and replace the 2015 Clean Water Rule has had a much more limited comment period, so they don't want input from citizens. They're doing their best to limit it unnecessarily, and it's, you know, I think it's driven by special interests who have made campaign donations. That's, you know, so this is what we're seeing. It's a dismantling of protections we already have, and a turning away from using scientific research to inform our decisions on how to protect our public interests and our common wealth, where water and air are, you know, our common wealth.
I want to bring on another caller. Terry is with us in Hales Corners. Terry, hi.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank you for this incredibly informative discussion. My main concern is that climate change is leading to heavier precipitation events in Wisconsin and in the Midwest. And my understanding of the state law is that if you eliminate a wetland, you need to create 1.5 times as many, but it doesn't have to be in the same watershed. So that combination of things, you know, greatly concerns me. And again, thank you for this very insightful discussion.
Terry, thanks for that call. And Jillian, I want to get into that replacement wetland issue. In many cases, you can fill in a wetland if you create new ones elsewhere. Are new wetlands, person-made wetlands, as good as ones that have been there longer?
They are not as good, generally speaking. Ecosystems are very complex, and they take, you know, hundreds or thousands of years to evolve to a point that you find them in at any given moment. And what people are finding when we construct mitigation wetlands is that you can replace some of the functionality. So it's certainly a good thing to be doing because where development is unavoidable, for instance, creating a wetland definitely helps to replace some of the functions. But we find that time is an important component to ecological function, and time cannot be replaced quickly. For instance, the soils in a wetland, they're invisible, and so they're very hard to understand. But there's a lot of structure and chemistry going on. There's a lot of microbial life going on, and that all evolves over time. So the microbes and the soil structure in a brand new wetland is not the same as one that has been in place for hundreds or thousands of years. And so the carbon function in particular in a new freshwater wetland can take decades to hundreds to thousands of years to come back to the same kind of capacity to sequester or store carbon in the wetland. Interestingly, saltwater wetlands like a salt marsh or a mangrove, they have a different microbial community and a different soil chemistry, so they actually can start storing and sequestering carbon fairly rapidly after a new one has been created or built. And so it depends on which function you're looking at. If you want to create some flood storage, you can, you know, do that a little more easily than you can, for instance, replace that carbon storage function.
And we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Jillian Davies, senior ecological scientist at the Massachusetts-based BSC Group, visiting scholar at Tufts University. She recently co-wrote a piece for The Conversation titled "What the World Needs Now to Fight Climate Change: More Swamps." A new business hub in Milwaukee called the Sherman Phoenix is nearing completion, and supporters hope the development will drive investment to that part of the city. But as Jimena Conde reports, the project is also offering more than 20 small business owners a support system often unavailable to Milwaukee entrepreneurs.
So that's where Embody Yoga will be. And this area will be our vegan restaurant and our Buffalo Boss.
Joanne Sabir, developer and future Sherman Phoenix tenant, maps out where businesses will move into come November. The former BMO Harris Bank is not quite ready. Construction equipment stands next to the main entrance. And while the back end has new plate glass windows, the windows at the front of the building are still boarded up. The bank and several other nearby buildings were destroyed by fire during two nights of unrest in Sherman Park a little more than 2 years ago. Protesters set the businesses alight after police fatally shot 23-year-old Sylval Smith.
We really look at this as a place where you can live. You'll be able to get acupuncture, yoga, eat some fried chicken. It's organic. And some vegan food. There'll be a spectrum of goodness.
Sabir's helped lead the $4 million fundraising efforts to convert the building into a commercial center. The project is also providing a comprehensive support system for its tenants, most of whom are people of color. They'll be able to master technical skills required to run their growing businesses through workshops, a diverse pool of mentors, and coaching sessions. They'll also have access to wellness services like acupuncture. Sabir says entrepreneurs of color don't often get the support they need to grow.
There is access to capital that a lot of black-owned businesses are not aware of. There are angel investors that black-owned businesses have not been tapped into. So it's really opening the sphere of opportunity.
Beth Haskovic is with the Local Initiative Support Corporation, a Milwaukee nonprofit. She says there are dozens of organizations that help entrepreneurs with accessing capital, marketing, and bookkeeping, but there are gaps in support. And information about resources may not reach business owners of color.
The segregation in Milwaukee impacts people of color differently than their white counterparts in this city. And so I think just the way that people build relationships, the networks that they have, limits people's ability to connect to resources that might be available to them.
Haskovic says entrepreneurs may also find themselves working with multiple agencies.
You know, they could go to one place to get a loan. They could go another place to get access to business coaching. They could go to a third place to get mentorship. That's a lot of work for somebody who's trying to run a business.
In the weeks after the Sherman Park unrest, Governor Scott Walker announced a $4.5 million plan to rebuild economically disadvantaged Milwaukee neighborhoods through housing and job training. The Sherman Phoenix was developed after those funds were distributed, but is in the same mold. The development is supposed to symbolize a rise from the ashes and a rebirth. It has gotten $250,000 in other state grants and $215,000 in city funding. Joanna Brooks is one of the Sherman Phoenix's future tenants and heads the entrepreneurship support program. She says most of the Phoenix's tenants already had thriving businesses.
We were here. We were doing this work. We were deeply rooted in our communities doing this work. We just didn't have, again, the access and the attention and some of the resources, and now that's happening through the Sherman Phoenix.
Planners are hoping the project will attract new customers as a destination like the Third Ward's public market. At a neighborhood festival, resident Rhonda Hill says she's skeptical about whether the Sherman Phoenix will gain popularity outside the community. But she says she's still excited.
The Sherman Phoenix being there and having a lot of black businessmen and women there that other people from the neighborhood can see, that inspires, I think, hope and gives the rest of the residents an idea of, okay, what can I think of? What can I dream of? What can I do?
Current tenant Joanna Brooks says that's the sort of thinking the project hopes to inspire. For Brooks, reaching the milestone of having a brick and mortar is also pushing her to think about what's next for her business. Ximena Condi, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll find out why a U.S. foreign investment program that was almost eliminated last year is getting bipartisan support for increased funding now. Spoiler alert, it's because of China. Some American cities are booming in the long recovery from the Great Recession, but our guest takes us on a tour of the cities that have been left behind. Plus, a look at some of the best live albums of all time. You could share your favorites. That's coming up Monday on Central Time.